Top Trends researcher and publisher of the Trends Journal rejoins the show with his review of the mid-year Trends Journal report here, impacting the economy and our geopolitical arena. Welcome back, Gerald Celente.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you back. And you know, the Globalnomics report, that's your mid-year report. What grabs the reader, this is entertaining. This is the way that media was meant to be. Pundits call for the end of the printed media altogether. It's all going online. What I think is leading that charge is the Trends report. So let's talk about the wealth gap. You sort of start off the report with this wealth gap, and I think this is underreported in the mainline media. The Dow's hitting new highs every week almost. But in reality, we've got a major disconnect between the haves and the have-nots. We've got 102 million people who could be working for one reason or another have just given up.
Well, you look at the numbers. For example, when Obama was president, he was bragging that he created 10 million jobs. Yeah, he did. But according to the Harvard-Princeton study, 94% of those jobs are temporary work. You look at the numbers of millennials that are living with their parents because they can't afford to buy homes. It's over a third. You have 51% of the people in America having full-time jobs. Great. They're paying $30,000 a year or less. You have 8 people that have more money, more wealth, than half the world's population combined. We've never seen a wealth gap like this before. Under Trump's plan to tax the very rich, it's about 35%. It's currently 39.5%. Under Reagan, it was 70%. Under Eisenhower, it was a 90% tax rate. So you have the Bezos, the Buffetts, the Bloombergs, the Zuckerbergs, with these multi-billion, the Gates, unheard of wealth, paying tax rates that are just way, way out of scale for what they're making. And then you look at the whole scam of all the, you saw with the Panama Papers last April, and you're finding out all these offshore deals by the wealthies and the multinationals. But we, the little people, have to pay every penny in tax. So that's why you're seeing, again, what we made clear is this past election in the United States, it wasn't Trump the messenger. It was the message. And the message is that people are tired of getting shafted. So that's what this is really about, whether it's in the United States and whether it's the Brexit vote. That was another issue about it. When it happened over there in Italy with the five-star movement. Well, by the way, these populist movements are losing progress, not because of the message of the movements, but the messengers. Again, with Le Pen in France, the same thing. But now they got a new guy in Macron who just came in, just had another election, and he's got all the power he needs. But he's pro-business, pro-euro, but then you look at the amount of people that came out and vote. 57% just stayed home last Sunday, rather than going out and vote. And that's in a country where you get high voter turnout.
Look at Venezuela, right? I know you've been following it closely. That's a serious economic situation you have there, and it's turning into a revolt. Any comments there?
Oh, sure. Again, what's their major export?
Oil.
What are oil prices doing? So now, as people know that subscribe to the Trends Journal, and we do a Trends in the News broadcast each weekday night, beginning June 2014, when oil prices were at $115 a barrel and they started to rapidly fall, we said this is the beginning of a long downtrend. People forget, and tracking trends is an understanding of where we are, how we got here, and where we're going. Saudi, our great ally, who the Wahhabis, who worked to overthrow Gaddafi, Assad, the Saudis said what we're going to do is we're going to let these oil prices keep falling. And we're going to wipe out all of the smaller producers in countries that it's more expensive for them to get oil out of the ground. And it failed. Their strategy failed. So as we're speaking now, we're talking Brent from being $115 3 years ago in June to being around $45 a barrel. This is very important. Going back to Venezuela, major export, major income, oil, revolution, Brazil, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait. Look at all of the countries that rely heavily on oil as their major GDP income source. As the prices go down, internal combustion is going to heat up, and it's going to spread beyond the borders. That's what we're going to start seeing unfolding, and no one is putting it together. It's more than just a supply and demand problem. Because, you know, now the United States, in two more years, we're going to be producing more natural gas and oil than Russia. So it's not a supply and demand problem in the sense it's going to be, oh, all we need is the Chinese to buy more, and we have to drive more. No, there's way too much product on the market, and it's going to get worse. Because no one is talking about all the alternative energy sources that are developed and developing in major economies, particularly in Europe, that are not using fossil fuels.
You know, our fracking industry is huge here, especially in the upper Midwest, and it's continued to be hit hard by this glut. Plus, we read that the number of oil rigs are starting to stack up and reserves are overflowing. So I think you make a great point there, because we were looking for $75 to $100 oil until this latest turn of events. Wanted to switch over to jobs, though. I like this title here, Lousy Jobs, Rotten Pay. You know, little progress, you say, made on the job front. We all had high hopes, but unfortunately, underemployment is a huge issue.
Yeah, it's because of a number of factors, and the greatest factor, of course, one of them is the manufacturing jobs that have been exported overseas, beginning primarily with NAFTA back in 1994, and just escalating, so you don't have middle-class pay anymore. And I'll never forget the debate between Ross Perot and Al Gore, and when Perot warned of that great sucking sound, and the Clinton administration was bragging that you won't have those dirty jobs anymore. You'll have clean service sector jobs. Yeah, so now you can have a clean service sector job and you have that education that you're $70,000 to $80,000 in debt for. You can get a job at Amazon, you know. Maybe they'll have a degree in packaging, you know, how you can package well. And so that's what's happened to the jobs. It's not only in the manufacturing outsourcing, more the monopolization of multinationals grabbing all the businesses. This happened also because of the bailouts following the crash of 2008. So what's happened is since that, the bigs have become much bigger, and because of zero interest rate policy and negative interest rate policy abroad, you're looking at, well, again, just looking at Amazon buying up Whole Foods. They're getting money for nothing. Their stock is, what, about 200 times PE ratio? They're barely earning a profit, but they get money for nothing. Because they got all this dough, all this stock advantage. And so that what's happening is with the jobs, you're having more and more companies buy out other companies, whether it's in the news media with the newspapers or within the grocery chains. So what happens is they keep firing people as they consolidate. And because they control the market sector so strongly, they have no opposition. So they can pay their workers nothing. And that's what they often do. So when you're looking at people earning $12 an hour, $15, you can't live on that today. And those are the kind of jobs that we're creating. So we have a very serious problem that we don't see getting better.
Exactly, serious problems that aren't getting better. And you also discussed the midterm elections, and obviously there's going to be a battle here. It could be the economy that is the deciding factor. Tell us more, please.
Well, it is the economy. It goes back to that. You know, we were the only that I know of, unless there's another one, let us know, that predicted that Trump would win. And we did that in May of 2016. It's in black and white. It's the economy. That was the Clinton campaign slogan back in 1992. It's the same one now. So when you look at the last election and you look at the numbers, yeah, you know, well, Hillary Clinton got more votes than Trump. Yes, she did. Where'd she get them? On the East and West Coast. Those are more profit-making areas. Again, Silicon Valley and the East Coast, Wall Street and Silicon Valley. So you have more income generating coming here. But you take a drive through the Midwest and parts of the South, you know, it's a day in Calcutta when you see all the boarded up small towns. and you see the real poverty in this country. That's what's really going on. And as you see the cover of the Trends Journal, we have USA crossed out. We have DSA, Divided States of America. And it could not be clearer when you look at the economic disparity. And so that's what we're looking at here. And when the elections come up, the midterm elections, again, are going to be basically around the economy. That's the bottom line, and that's why Trump won.
I'd like to move on to the precious metals. That's our bread and butter here, and you outline in the Trends Journal that if the Fed continues to raise rates, it could boost the dollar somewhat. But the current Fed funds futures after this latest rate hike, we just had the last meeting, don't show very high odds for another rate hike this year. You see a downside at worst of 1,100 on the yellow metal and maybe an upside of a break above 14, which could run to 2,000 and beyond.
They're not going to do one in September, but we're forecasting they're going to probably do one That's our best estimate. We would, not staking our reputation on it, because we're looking at very weak GDP numbers. So if the GDP numbers stay weak, they may not raise them again. But even if they do, it's not that big a raise. But it's going to hurt gold prices, no question about it, because there's the opportunity cost of holding gold. The more expensive, the higher rates, the more expensive it is to hold. So it's a downside risk on that. But again, as you said, we have $1,100 is our, that's our approximate downside risk. But then you look at the global situation. The United States is ramping up the war in Syria. And by the way, it's against international law that we're even there. Well, them Iranians are there. Yeah, but they were invited by the government of Assad. Oh, I hate that guy, Assad. Well, it's not whether or not you hate him. He was democratically elected by the people of Syria. And it was monitored by international observers, and the election was rated as a fair and open election. But those are only facts. So now the United States is a foreign power attacking a sovereign nation, shot down a Syrian jet this week, been blowing up Iranian drones. Iran and Russia were brought there by Assad. And if you go back to Donald Trump, when he was candidate Trump, he was talking about, we don't even know who these rebels are. I talk to generals here. Nobody knows who these people are we're supporting. Well, we're supporting more of them, giving them more money and more armaments. I'm saying this about gold. You look at one of our last trend releases. We believe the United States is going to instigate something with Iran. Of course, it'll look like Iran did it, whether it's with the United States and Iran or Iran and Israel. And by the way, Iran, who the United States calls the worst, the biggest supporter of terrorism in the world, has not invaded a country in 250 years. And it's the United States and its allies that have been supporting all these terrorist groups. We could go back to a guy named Jimmy Carter, the wonderful that brought us the Taliban and the Mujahideen to get the Russians out of Afghanistan for everybody with attention deficit disorder, and a wonderful guy by the name of Osama bin Laden. So it's not Iran that's been supporting the terrorists. It's been the United States that supported the terrorists to get Gaddafi out of office. And that thanks Clinton, Obama, Samantha Power, and Susan Rice. It's not Iran that's supporting those moderate rebels in Syria. It's the Arab League and the United States that are supporting these radical groups. What we're saying is gold is the ultimate safe haven in times of geopolitical conflict, and the heat is there as hot as it is in Phoenix. It's well over 100 degrees. And if anybody can't feel the heat, they better get out of the air conditioning room and stop listening to the propaganda, the one story they play on the Cartoon News Network and all the other BS networks, that the Russians are coming. The Russians are coming and not looking at the world. So that's why we're saying gold, we believe, and we don't give financial advice, is still the ultimate safe haven asset, particularly in these times of geopolitical and economic uncertainty.
Exactly. And I couldn't have said it any better. And, you know, I think another aspect of the gold story is that it's just unloved right now. It's out of favor. You know, there's always that potential to return to the mean. It seems to be waiting for just the right time, you know, for enough bulls to regain their confidence and start another stampede. But I'd like to talk about another alternative to the dollar, the dilution of the dollar, not just the dollar, but, you know, all the major currencies, you know, the ECB, the euro. Then there's the cryptocurrencies. You know, they're predicted to take up about 10% of the Forex currency space in the next decade, $500 billion. Can you tell us what the impact of those factors might be to the U.S. dollar and gold?
Well, now that Japan is, by the way, has allowed Bitcoin to be, you know, a legal currency for exchange. And that's why you saw Bitcoin prices rise so rapidly. And they went down for a while in China because they put restrictions on dealing. So that's the problem with cryptocurrencies. We see a lot of value in them as a gamble and as an alternative to weakening currencies, but the governments could control them in a flash. And with gold, at least you can have physical possession of it. All you have is Bitcoin, is the air. And I don't care how good they think these computer systems are. Someday, somewhere, somehow, this thing could crash in a second, everything you have is wiped out.
I think we're really circa 95, 96 internet bubble. I think we have several years to go on this bubble, but there's that part of me that remembers the 2000, 2001 crash. Right now, the hackers are leaving Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space alone because it's one of their own. It's in their club, their private club, if you will. But eventually, the blockchain will be compromised if the CIA doesn't already have a zero-day or backdoor already in place. We just don't know. When that happens, $500 billion will start to rush somewhere.
Well, again, you know, that's why we're looking at gold. And it's been around for, you know, centuries, and it's not going to go anywhere. Also, we're calling for a 10% market correction. We're not looking at a market crash at this time. However, if geopolitical tensions increase to a level beyond sustainability, the markets will crash along with civilization, unfortunately. And this will be the war when they asked Albert Einstein what weapons will be used to fight World War III. He said, I don't know. He said, but they'll be using sticks and stones to fight World War IV. And so that's what we're looking at. If war breaks out between the United States and Iran, it's going to drag in China and Russia. It's going to be the war to really end all wars and much of civilization. So again, you know, when times get tough in any way, markets crash as well. It's a safe haven commodity. And it's, you know, that's your nuclear shelter in many ways in terms of a nuclear shelter against a financial collapse.
Nuclear shelter, that is a keeper right there. I'm going to quote Il Genio Napolitano. Gold, folks. And remember the brilliant company. I think Einstein was more interesting, the company he kept. I think he would love the Trends Institute, and I think he'd probably be there writing alongside with some of these great minds. Gerald Celente, thank you, sir.
Thank you.